Welcome back to Arthropod, your entomology podcast. I am your host, Jonathan Larson, and today we are joined by Carl Braun of Quality Pest Control here in the studio. I have a little mobile studio set up here at my office. Carl, say hello to the people of the world.
Good morning, people of the world.
Carl, it's really great to have you on the show. I talk about pest control a lot on Arthropod. We talk about all kinds of different pesky little insects that get into people's homes or into their lives. And you work in the pest control industry, but it was kind of a circuitous path that you took to get there, right?
Indeed it was. Kind of an epic journey, if you will.
I like that, epic journey. We can put some music in the background for that.
Oh, I thought there was. Yeah. Anyway, how I got into pest control, I had a career in healthcare first. And about 7 years ago, again, epic journey. Life has its twists and turns. And I found myself with my wife looking for a different profession. Pest control came our way. We stumbled across a very good opportunity. Little did we know what a good opportunity it was. But frankly, it just seemed pretty cool to check out, and I'm glad that we did.
Cool. And you were just looking for a new career, and pest control was something you were always interested in? Did you always have an interest in insects, or?
Not particularly. It's almost as if it were divine intervention.
Oh.
Had I the right nudge at the right time of my life, quite possibly I would be sitting on the other side of this microphone interviewing someone else. This entomology and pest control is such a fascinating and amazing field. It's just awesome to me. It just kind of fell into our laps. And being a scientist by nature, I don't do anything halfway. And so I jumped in and here we are today.
And so what year was this?
That would have been the fall of 2010.
2010 was when Quality Pest Control was born.
Actually, no.
Okay.
Quality Pest Control was born in 1996. We purchased an existing business. That gentleman's business model was quite different than ours, but it worked quite well for him. He was successful as defined by him, and we have taken it to hopefully new levels.
Cool. So Quality Pest Control, 2010. And since 2010, how have you been getting into the industry more? If you started out in a medical profession, like you said, you have a scientific background. How have you been getting into the bugs more and the rodents more? How have you been learning?
Well, it started with the whole licensing process. Okay. It's, as you know, it's can you pass the test, basically? And so I was self-taught and got my license that way. The gentleman that we bought the business from was kind enough to mentor me for a couple of months, which basically translated to introduce me to his client list. But I found a gentleman through one of my suppliers who, this is a fascinating story too, but, he mentored me and still does. He's in Manhattan, Kansas. He's a PhD entomologist like you, only not an extension entomologist. He has a pest control firm.
Okay.
So anyway, I've made good friends with him and his staff and I've gotten involved with NPMA and, going back to my health background, I embrace continuing education. I can't learn enough about this stuff, as you will attest to.
Carl is a frequent customer, I guess, of the extension office. He has a thirst for knowledge that's really cool to see from the pest control industry. I think that that's a misconception people have about pest control operators. Would you agree that they just want to spray and pray, kind of?
Sadly, there are those who do that. I'm glad that you brought that up because when we started to get into this, it was a personal challenge. I want to help raise the bar of professionalism. I want to challenge those chuck with the truck who spray and pray to become professionals. It's unfortunate that in this industry, some people tend to want to be in a race to the bottom and go for the lowest bid and you can't do quality service on the cheap. My challenge to other pest control operators is to raise the bar of professionalism and be a pro. Take pride in what you do and give a good service that has value.
Cool. That's a good message, I think, to have. What are some of the big bugs, the big bads that you deal with in your day-to-day work?
Well, that depends on which day.
Okay.
as you know, strictly speaking of bugs, probably the number one bug would be bed bugs. But there are lots of little insect pests that we deal with, as well as some vertebrate pests, and it kind of varies with the season. Things that have been keeping us busy in no particular order this winter have been mice, and then mice, and I can't leave out mice, but there's cockroaches and bed bugs and an occasional rat or two. So that's what we've been busy with in the winter. It's soon to be spring here in lovely Nebraska. In fact, it's quite springful today.
It's true. Yeah.
So I'm anticipating visits from ants. I went on my first ant call of the season yesterday.
Okay.
So that's usually, as you know, what to expect in the spring. So a lot of it is kind of seasonal.
Okay. So you've been in the business for 7 years. Have the pests changed over those 7 years?
I don't know that the pests have changed, and I don't know that they haven't.
Okay.
I know that my interaction with them has, and the reason why is going back to the Jerry whom we bought this from, he had a certain way of doing things.
Okay.
And a whole lot of things of not doing. I have challenged myself to embrace one particular pest every year and get better at it.
Okay.
My first year, I had some advice from one of my suppliers. He said, Carl, embrace bed bugs. So that's what we've done. We've embraced bed bugs. I had some advanced training with that. I spent some time on the East Coast with some folks, and we've embraced bed bugs.
Figuratively, not literally.
Figuratively, indeed, indeed. We've embraced bed bug control.
Ah, gotcha.
Okay. And then looked at rodents the next year, and that is a process. You know, one of the things that I've observed in my journey, and I'm blessed to mentor a guy now in Kansas City, and I smile because he's asking the same questions that I asked, and that is, well, what should I get? What needs to be in my can? And it's not what material to use, but how to use it, and how to use it stems from understanding the pest. So going back to my journey every year to kind of learn more about a specific pest, rodents were my second year, and then mosquitoes, and so on and so forth. This year, it's small flies.
Small flies, yes.
Yes.
What do we got? Drain flies.
Fruit flies.
Fruit flies. Fungus gnats. All different kinds of little pests.
And about 1,200 other species.
Yes, yeah. You've been reading up on the small flies for sure. I think that's really an interesting approach to have a pest that you pick every year that you're going to get to know a little bit better, embrace figuratively, as we joked about before. Is that something that you see your colleagues doing as well? Or?
You know, yes and no. Okay. I mean, there are, sadly, collectively, no. There are a handful of people that do. Again, as I shared with you, I love continuing education, and I travel. I've been to your old school several times for the Purdue conference, which is amazing and awesome. And anyone that's listening to this that's never been to it needs to go to it.
It is a destination.
It's a destination. You bet. I've been to the Kentucky Short Course. I've been to New York and studied with Bobby Corrigan. I've also been to the East Coast, like I said, and studied with some people at Cooper Pest Control. And so the point is that I travel and learn from lots of different people and network that way. To your question, do other pest control? I've never met another guy from anywhere close, except for my friend in Manhattan.
Okay.
I also go to some MPMA functions, and again, I never see anybody from around here.
From Nebraska
or even close.
Okay. But there are continuing education opportunities for pest control operators.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And do they take advantage of all those?
You know, that's an interesting question. The people that I see take advantage of them.
Right.
So that would be the choir, the proverbial choir that people preach to.
Yeah.
I don't know how many people that are out there that don't.
Okay.
But judging from just the sheer number of pest control providers that there are, I would imagine that a lot of people don't.
Okay.
Which is unfortunate, and you should. Anybody who's listening to this should.
So let's talk a little more about that. I think that a lot of people out there listening have probably interacted with the pest control industry in some variety of or other. Seems like a lot of people hire somebody in their lifetime. But I don't think that the general public always has a very good understanding of the gig. They don't really know what the job entails. So can you speak to that a little more? Like, what is your day like normally?
Well, I can speak to what my day is like.
Okay.
Okay. But before I do that, I will contrast with the perception of, at least my perception of what their perception is.
Okay.
And that would be that, back to the spray and pray mentality. We have the soup of the day in our big sprayer in the back of our truck, and it doesn't matter if your pest is an ant or a spider, which is another conversation for a whole different podcast, but or whatever, it doesn't matter. You're going to get this whether you want it or not.
Okay.
And that's not how we roll. It starts with listening. It's cliche. You've heard it 100 times or more, maybe. But we have 2 ears and 1 mouth, and we should use those proportionally. If we listen to what our clients or potential clients are telling us, they will tell us more than you realize. Anything from what's bugging them, pardon the pun, to their past experiences with pest control, what's made them happy and what they're not happy with, and what their expectations are. So listening is how it starts. And then we do a pretty thorough investigation. I'm not fond of the word inspection,
okay.
Although that's what it is. And why I'm not is everybody calls it an inspection. So if everybody has an inspection, then every inspection must be the same, right?
Right.
And ours is not. Ours is pretty thorough. I don't know. It's very thorough. And then we have a conversation with findings discussing, conducive conditions, the biology of in very broad terms, the biology of the different pests that we find. And again, back to the conducive conditions, what can we expect to see because of what's where? Then we have a discussion as far as what you want.
Right.
What are your expectations? What do you want us to do? And then we try to put together a plan that works for both.
When you do all that, what are some of the trials and tribulations that you encounter?
In a word, Google.
Okay.
If it's on the internet, it must be a fact. And also some of it too is people have had bad experiences or less than positive experiences with previous pest control providers. And maybe that's just their expectation. I mean, someone could have done a perfect job, but again, a big part of my job is managing expectations.
Okay.
For instance, if you have me come to your house, and I know you wouldn't do this, but to quote unquote spray for spiders.
Right.
I want that done today and I never want to see a spider for a year. Now, that's not realistic. But if we're not clear about that, you're not going to be a happy camper.
Sure.
So managing expectations is key.
So when you have that conversation with your client, how does that go? What does that sound like? Because I deal with a lot of that in my day-to-day world where people say, I want to know what to do so that I never see another spider, roly-poly, box elder bug, that kind of thing ever again. How do you talk to somebody about that and get them to understand that that's not a feasible option?
Well, no two conversations are the same.
Okay.
Some people are much better listeners. I mean, our clients have to listen too. Sometimes I feel like it's the Charlie Brown Christmas thing where it's, hi, I'm Carl, blah, 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 bugs, blah, 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 blah. And then other people are very intent and are quite serious and they're invested. I mean, if I can kind of sidestep for just a minute. I mean, the way we kind of coach our clients to begin with, pests are basically 4 different things. I mean, first of all, they're a pest when you decide they're a pest. But there are the ones that are just creepy pests that people don't like the roly-polies.
Okay? Right.
And then there are ones that bite you and sting you, like bed bugs and yellow jackets and what have you. And then there are the ones that can carry disease, both vertebrate and invertebrate, rats, mice, ticks, mosquitoes, cockroaches, flies. I mean, the list goes on with that one.
Yep.
And then there are the ones that destroy your property, and that would be like carpenter ants and the termites and what have you. All these things that most of your listeners probably already know. So we listen to what their concerns are. We have that conversation and target the conversation toward what they want. Does that make sense?
Did Absolutely.
I ramble too much?
No, no. I think that's an interesting approach.
So
when they start to address those concerns with you, Do you ever see a light go on with some of them?
Sometimes.
Okay.
Sometimes. as an example, a very interesting client yesterday. She stopped short of taking out a notebook. You know, she wanted to know everything, and she will be very compliant and do every single thing that I ask. Well, almost every single thing that I ask. Other clients have the mentality that, like I said, Carl, blah, 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 bugs, blah, blah, blah.
Wah, wah, wah.
Wah, wah. Yeah, yeah, that's, you got it. I was at a client yesterday. We are trapping mice out of her $1.5 million home in fashionable West Omaha. If you look in her garage, you know, and then I show her some things where the mice are obviously getting in, you'll wonder why you have mice.
Yep.
Let us do this. No, just set some traps. Why do I still have mice? Well, you need to do the rest of you need to play the rest of the game, if you will.
Let's talk about that for a bit then, because I think that's part of the pest control operation that most people don't understand, is that the recommendations an operator makes,
mm-hmm.
they're not just words in the wind. They're something that it's a professional's opinion on how you can minimize your problem.
Absolutely. Indeed.
How do you get more people to listen to that?
Well, again, it's a broad spectrum of client, and it's listening to their expectations. I mean, if they're open to that, great. Sometimes I offer it as a service for us. I don't participate in this race to the bottom stuff. And if you want me to do it, there's a fee associated with it. And in this particular case that I was telling you about, that's not going to, that won't get their attention. I mean, when they finally slow down long enough to get tired of me catching mice, they'll say, okay, go ahead and do that, you know?
Right.
But the other type of client where maybe they are on a little bit tighter budget, they do try to do it themselves. Sometimes successfully, sometimes not so successfully. I think I kind of got off track there a little
No,
bit.
I think that this is just a really interesting topic of discussion, because I don't know if it's a uniquely American phenomenon or Midwestern phenomenon. It sounds like you've been in pest control situations across the country, but there's this expectation of control means eradication, and it means either a spray or a trap. Like, it always has to involve those things when there are preventative measures out there as well, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I'm interested to hear how you teach people about that.
Okay. First of all, let's back up just a little bit. You touched on a point about different parts of the country.
Okay.
And I'm going to go back to a word that I've used a lot, and that is expectations. People in New York City have a different perception and expectation from pest control.
Okay.
People that live in Georgia have a different baseline of what pest control means. People that live in Arizona have a different baseline. And it's based on, I mean, it comes from the weather and the type of pests that we have. People in the Midwest, my collective assessment is a lot of people just want that. Can you just come and spray at one time? So how do I get them on board, if you will, with a maintenance program? I stress how important it is to have periodic inspections, audits, if you will. We check things out, and treat as necessary for what's going on, the pest that's happening. Again, it's tough here in the Midwest. It really is.
People here are very do-it-yourself.
They want to be do-it-yourself. Yeah. Now, this could be a soapbox item in and of itself. But yeah, it can be very do-it-yourself. And it goes back to a point that I made earlier. You know, it's understanding the biology of the pest. We're the professional. And the other people like me, you need to view your service as professional service and have value. You're not just a guy with a can of bug spray. That makes you, if that's who you are, you might as well be the guy that owns the house too.
Right.
Okay. So it starts with understanding the pest, and it's, as you know, it's not the material that you use, but how you use the material that you use. It's, and that's what makes this industry so fascinating.
Right.
I mean, it truly is. Put on your tweed jacket and get out your magnifying glass and get out a pipe and away you go. You know, I mean, you just have to, You expressed an interest in forensics. You kind of have to be the CSI of the bug world.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So
I've always been fascinated by that dichotomy, that people, there's a lot of people who have problems with the way pest control is done, but when the rubber hits the road, when they get a pest, that's the way they want it taken care of in their home as well. And the expectations in managing those, I just think that's a really fascinating part of the industry that people don't, that the general public and business owners don't always think about. It's not always something that they put in their mindset when they're hiring somebody.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun to take a look at. So based on what we're discussing here, what are some of the biggest problems that your clients that you've seen or just people in general, what are some of the mistakes they make before and after hiring a professional?
Well, first off, let's pick on bed bugs for a minute.
Okay.
Okay. It could be ants. It could be any number of things. I mean, let's pick on bed bugs. People perceive a bed bug service to be expensive. Well, my answer to that is, how do you define expensive? What's it worth to you to not have the psychological trauma of being bitten by these little bugs every night? You know? So I don't know if it's expensive or not, but people have this perception. And so what they do is they run out to the nearest Lowe's or whatever, the nearest box store, and get this stuff because it says kills bed bugs on it. And they don't understand bed bugs. They don't understand their biology. They don't understand the mechanism of action of this material.
Right.
And they may set off this bug bomb and then hose down the room. I've had a client who sprayed his mattress every night with a pyrethroid material and then wondered why he felt half sick all the time. And that's what we're up against, you know? And then finally they call us. Okay, so was it worth it to spend hundreds of dollars and make yourself half sick and still get eaten by these bugs and now make your problem worse than it really ever was?
Right.
Or just to call us in the first place? I don't know. But I never fault anyone for trying it themselves, especially in Nebraska. I mean, I'm that guy too.
Right.
You know, I rebuilt an engine once in high school and I had a bucket of extra parts. And no, I'm just kidding about that. That really didn't happen.
Yeah, it is always fascinating when they come in and they've been battling it for months and they've just now turned to somebody else for help. So they make mistakes beforehand by applying their own products incorrectly, mm-hmm. it sounds like. Or in the wrong places. What are some things that after you've gone and then you get brought back later on, a couple months later, what are some problems that you see people fall into after you've visited?
Okay, now we'll talk about ants.
Okay.
Okay. With ants specifically, there's lots of different ants that invade our structures, but there's a handful of the most common ones. And I tell my clients, first of all, I learned something quite fascinating just this year at the Purdue conference.
Okay.
We can talk about that after this show.
Okay.
But anyway, ants are not usually a one and done thing. I mean, you might make them go away for a while, but the ant, my money's on the ant every time. You know, they've been around a lot more millions of years than we've walked this planet.
Yeah.
And they'll be around a lot longer once we're gone. In fact, I would put money on it that they're species of ants that help us return to dirt.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So,
absolutely.
But anyway, back to your question. I can do the best service in the world. We can talk about exclusion. We can seal around backsplashes. We can address sanitation. But I can't be there and wipe up your kid's spills. I can't be there and sweep your floor. The ant wins, you know? I mean, my materials won't beat. It's kind of like when you go to the gym. Mm-hmm. You can't out-exercise a bad diet.
Yeah,
you know?
I like that, yeah.
So, I mean, if you go to the gym and eat a bag of Oreos every time you leave, you're never going to really make a lot of progress.
Sure.
So if you hire someone from our industry to help you with your ants, but still leave junk around, and you're not going to win. Do we have time that I can give you a couple examples?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Early in my career, I went to a house in, once again, fashionable West Omaha. both the husband and the wife were physicians. Beautiful house. Their garage is bigger than some people's homes.
Sure.
I'm walking in the house and I'm tiptoeing to get to navigate without stepping on stuff. And she asked me, why do I have ants? And I'm down on my hands and knees with my flashlight under the refrigerator. And I wanted to say, come take a look. Ask yourself, why wouldn't I have ants? Okay. Now, I had another client, oddly enough, another physician. They have a brand new house in Bennington, and they are just so, everything's just got to be so. Okay. And upstairs in the hallway, they had a tile floor. There was a I don't know, their child was maybe three, Tootsie Pop laying on the floor, covered with ants.
Yep.
She left it 2 days covered with ants and then called me and was mad at me that she had ants. Take a guess what my pest control measure was that day.
I'm going to guess that it was you picked up the lollipop and pitched it.
And I wiped the floor.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I applied no magic material other than water on it on a towel, and that was it. No more callback. But it's like, yeah, so anyway.
Well, let's spin off of that then. Let's talk about pests are animals, mm-hmm. insects are animals, and all animals have needs. And mm-hmm. the three needs are food, water, and shelter, right? Mm-hmm. And those are things that we can control in the home. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that?
I absolutely agree.
So how can you provide some tips on how people can control those carrying capacity factors?
Okay. As far as water, let's start with water. Okay. Fix leaks in your sink. Don't leave dirty dishes piled in your sink. Wipe up spills, things like, which also goes to the food thing. Sweep up food, empty your trash on a regular basis. Just practice good house sanitation, if you will.
With the water, what does the water often lead to? Like if you have a leaky pipe underneath your sink or behind a dishwasher even, okay. What kind of pests do you find associated with that?
Dampness behind a dishwasher in a kitchen, initially probably ants.
Okay.
And then, followed closely by our little friends, the cockroaches.
Okay.
The cockroaches are introduced into the environment. They don't just magically appear, in spite of some of the arguments of my clients. But they're brought in and they seek a place to hide. And the dishwasher's warm, here's moisture, and there's no shortage of food. So probably mostly ants and cockroaches. In the winter time, the water is less of a factor, but that's a perfect harbor for mice.
Okay.
It's warm and there's nesting material, and then the ability to get under the floors, the space between the cabinets and the actual floor. So that's another one. So that's the harbor and the food.
Okay, with a leak like that and the harbors there. What about in the sink? If the people left a bowl full of water overnight, do you find rodents drinking from that or roaches or?
I personally have never found a rodent drinking from that.
Okay.
I've never personally seen a rodent drink from that. However, a job that I'm just finishing up, the kid that lived in this house with his girlfriend told me that he saw a rat climbing out of a stock pot that was on his stove. So, it was pretty easy to track down where that guy was. I mean, and actually there were two that I took out of this house, a male and a female. But I didn't see that, but I heard the story secondhand. Okay. So, no, I've not seen rodents drinking. That would be more, I think, the cockroaches.
Okay. Cool. So, we've got different water resources. You mentioned some sanitizing for food, so not dirty dishes, no dirty dishes in the sink. I'll have to remember that one when I go home. You mentioned something earlier about looking under the fridge.
Mm-hmm.
Now, talk to me about that. What do you see under fridges and ovens and things?
Anything from rodent droppings to dust bunnies,
okay,
to Legos, crayons. What concerns me most is crumbs, food. Crumbs, food particles.
Like a spaghetti noodles under there.
Spaghetti noodles, Cheerios, and cookie crumbs. Sometimes you wonder how that this gets there, but it's
why didn't you eat this vanilla wafer instead of hiding it under your oven?
Exactly. Now, I will tell you this. You ask what interesting things do we find. I know we're kind of talking about insects, but I will share this story. One time, there was a very strong mousy odor, and I explained to this client that mice will take food and hide it. Oh, I'm okay. I put it in the refrigerator, and I said, that's not good enough. And we pulled out the refrigerator, and behind the refrigerator was gas, a pile of cat food that was well marked by that mouse's identifier.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that's another thing that I find under refrigerators.
Is animal food.
Animal food.
So part of sanitation can be putting the animal food in a more secure location,
mm-hmm.
or making sure that if your animal doesn't eat at all, what would you recommend then?
Okay, the doggy diner. That's an awesome thing that we talk about. What I try to coach my clients to do is just leave. All right, Fido, you get to eat in the morning, you get to eat in the evening, amen. Not to have free grazing all day long, and especially at night. And then to leave the food in a secured container. Again, you don't want the cockroaches and the mice are probably the two biggest ones, but ants too. I mean, ants crawl all over that stuff. So,
yeah. So those canister ones that you pour all the food into and it just fills
Oh, gosh. No, that's a no-no.
Yeah, that's a no-no. Okay. Yeah,
I think you would agree.
I would agree with that. Yeah. Absolutely. So we've covered some water, some food. How do we control shelter for these pests in the house?
In a word, tidiness. Okay. And that means a lot of things. I mean, people live in houses and people have kids and shoot, I have grandkids and if you were to look in my office at home, you would say, you hypocrite, because I'm not the tidiest person at times.
Sure, sure. It's a sign of genius.
Yeah, that's it. Obviously, you're a genius too.
Yeah, my office is pretty
genius promoting. Anyway, just take out the trash, pick up stuff. Don't leave stuff laying all around. And especially in these areas that are prone to infestations. Garages, basements and garages. The unfinished basement.
Okay.
People tend to do the same thing, and that is put everything in cardboard boxes and push it outside against the walls. Okay. And as you know, the cardboard, it's a conducive condition. Bugs like to hide in the cardboard, and so do mice. And it's pushed against the wall where it can possibly get wet. Or at the very least, we can't inspect. So, one of the things that and garages too, I mean, it's a train wreck, sometimes. What I try to coach my clients to do is use plastic bins instead of cardboard boxes and use metal shelves. And instead of push them against the wall, place them perpendicular to the wall, much like you might find aisles in a shopping store,
right.
Like a grocery store.
Okay.
And then, if we can, it's nice to even leave about a foot between the shelf and the wall so we can look behind it and look under it and get around and just do a good job with their pest control.
A no pest land right there.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that facilitates where all of our treatments start. And that's every single time with an inspection, with an audit, with a look around. It's not just show up with your can of magic juice and start hosing down everything.
Okay. I like that. Those are very practical tips rather than just, reduce your clutter or get rid of this. Those are some really concrete things that people can do in their day-to-day lives to help minimize pest problems. Hopefully all these prevention tips won't put you and your friends out of work or anything.
Oh, I don't think it will. It will help us do a better job for our clients, okay. You know.
That's encouraging to hear.
It is. Look, my money's on these guys all the time.
They've been around for a long time, and they've been bothering us pretty much the whole time we've been around.
Yep. I'm not worried about job security.
So let's talk about that then. Let's talk about the future of pest control. Do you think it includes more things like what we're talking about?
I hope so.
Okay. So why is that? Why do you hope for that?
Well, it lets us do a better job for our clients. It's environmentally responsible. I don't know. I mean, it's just better.
Responsible.
Yeah. Responsible is about the best word.
That's the way to boil it down.
Yeah. I mean, it's just much more responsible. Another thing that I see happening in our industry is technologies. Some people embrace technology and some people run from it. and I think that a lot of that is a generational thing. And I'm a baby boomer, but, I keep an open mind to a lot of technology, but yet as a baby boomer, I'm skeptical. I mean, okay. show me the money. And you can appreciate this as a scientist too. You know, okay, here's this sonic plug-in thing that will repel cockroaches.
Right.
Okay. Show me peer-reviewed science. Show me data that says this works, not an advertisement.
Right.
Okay. I mean, I have an open mind. Could it work? Show me.
Right.
You know, don't just tell me.
Are you from Missouri?
Actually, I lived in Missouri for a while.
So you picked up the show before.
I did. There are some cool technologies that I think will help us be better service providers for our clients. Are you familiar with Thermotrak?
No, tell me more about that.
Oh, gosh. It uses radar, and it actually works to see termites in walls. I said Thermotrak. Thermotrak is what I meant to say. Ah. Yeah, yeah. Just different imaging tools. Right.
So part of it is technology that you see is changing the game. So we've talked a lot about prevention, and prevention is something that I always hope becomes more a part of the industry, whether it's structural pest control or even turf pest control. What are some things that we in the land grant system and in the research system and the extension system, what are some things that we can do to either help promote that or to give you better tools? Like, what do you want to come down the pipeline if you had a dream list, a wish list?
If I had a dream list, first of all, that the land grant system, for lack of a better way to say it, I mean, that there's because of my connections in continuing education, I have met some amazing, brilliant, wonderful young scientists. And ironically, and I'm not just blowing smoke, I mean, your alma mater puts out some really cool people, smart people. I met a guy from North Carolina State this past at the Global Bedbug Summit who's doing some amazing work with bedbug bait, you know. And your colleague Jody had a wonderful lecture. So that helped me to understand how insects vector diseases and you know, it's stuff that I wouldn't have thought about.
Right.
So what can you do? Keep up the good work, provide quality continuing education and support the scientists. I mean, again, I don't think there's any real great, wonderful magic powder that's going to be developed anytime soon.
Right.
There's a lot of good tools out there. But for instance, the guy who's developing the bait, I mean, the active is the active. So the trick is, how do you attract the bed bug to it and then trigger the feeding? There's always a new gimmick out there. Some come, some go. And as providers of, in this industry, we have to be wary of the gimmicky. If it's too good to be true, it probably is.
Yeah.
Show me the science, basically. But back to your question, keep up the good work. I think that our chemical companies do a good job of funding a lot of the research. And as far as continuing ed, I mean, keep improving that, you know. Okay. I don't think that you can have enough of that.
Sounds like a plan to me.
Okay.
Carl, I wanted to say thank you for being on the show today. This was a really fun episode for me. I was really anticipating it just because I know I sit in my office and I talk about pest control to people, but you're out in the trenches. You're actually doing it, and you see the problems firsthand, and you deal with the people firsthand. So this was just really enlightening for me. So I wanted to say thank you for being on the show.
Well, Jonathan, I want to thank you for having me. This has been a lot of fun, and
I'm glad to hear it. Before we conclude here, Carl, I just wanted to ask, is there anything out there on the web that you'd like to promote?
You can find us on the web at www.qpcomaha.com, and from there it will take you to our Facebook and Twitter. I don't do a lot of the social media, but a little bit. So watch for maybe tips on our Twitter and our Facebook. Please check out our website. I try to update that a lot. I work hard to make that more of a resource than a marketing thing.
Cool. That sounds like an awesome thing. So qpcomaha.com.
Yep.
Go and check that out. For all of you listening, I hope that you enjoyed getting a firsthand account of the pest control industry, learning what goes on behind the scenes a little bit more, and hopefully learn some tips and tricks that you can use in your day-to-day lives. If you tune in next month, we're going to start a new sort of venture here on Arthropod. We're going to be delving into the world of arthropods, and we're going to be discussing what they are, where they come from, and all the different various categories, meeting with some experts from hopefully around the world on that topic, and we're just going to teach you everything there is to know about these exoskeleton-wearing creatures. So thanks for tuning in, and join us next time.